Welcome to the Jewish Policy Center conference call. I'm Shoshana Bryan, Senior Director of the JPC, and unusually, I am today's conference call guest as well as host. In my guest role, let me say that it is always thrilling to be at the White House, regardless of president, regardless of subject matter. Walking into the White House is really an amazing experience. In this case, it was like a Jewish community reunion, people who have worked for years on the issues of Israel and the Middle East. And I have to say that, because the audience was totally primed to hear this message. Some of the media today are grumping that there were no Palestinians there. You know why that is. There's a lot of media grumping going on today. If you get the Washington Post, you'll know exactly what I mean. But this plan that the President and Prime Minister Netanyahu put forward to the audience yesterday is consistent with what the President has said since his first press conference with the Prime Minister in February of 2017. There he laid down two markers for the Palestinians. First, he said, the Palestinians have to get rid of some of that hate that they're taught from a very young age. They're taught tremendous hate. I've seen what they're taught. It starts at a very young age, and it starts in the schoolroom. The second thing he said was, they have to acknowledge Israel. They're going to have to do that. There's no way a deal can be made if they're not ready to acknowledge a very, very great and important country. He has stuck to those points. The whole peace plan, which is called the Vision, is 180 pages long and very, very detailed. You can read it if you like. It's on the internet. The President and the Prime Minister, happily for us, did not read it yesterday. They covered the high points. Now, here I have to say the President's management of the Vision and his meetings with the Prime Minister and separately with Benny Gantz of Blue and White was important in two ways. First, it allowed the Israelis to demonstrate that there are areas in which their two parties can agree and that both can agree with Mr. Trump. That's important going into the third Israeli election in March. Second, it allowed the President to erase a fundamental misunderstanding about the role of the United States in the Middle East. It has been said that the United States has to be neutral between Israelis and Palestinians in order to make progress. I prefer that the United States be an honest broker. Neutrality accepts all the positions of both parties as equally compelling. An honest broker makes judgments, honestly. So start with what's on the table. Some of you know that I've written about this before. Israelis and Palestinians have different end games. The Palestinians, both Hamas and Fatah, seek three things: an independent state without recognizing a legitimate and permanent state of Israel in any territory. Both factions are willing to accept a temporary agreement with Israel on the way to fulfilling the PLO charter to which they're both committed. Second, they both agree that they want sovereign control of East Jerusalem, as they call it, as the capital of a Palestinian state. And third, what they call the right of return. Israel seeks three different things. First, recognition of the legitimacy and permanence of Israel within secure and recognized boundaries, free from threats or acts of force. That is UN Security Council Resolution 242's security promise to Israel. Second, the capital of Israel in Jerusalem and Israeli protection for Jewish patrimony in the eastern part of the city and in the West Bank. Third is end of conflict, end of claims. After an agreement, the Palestinians will not be able to press additional claims against Israel for territory or other so-called rights. Now, the Vision and the East Room ceremony addressed American judgments about the parties, their goals, and their behavior. The first of which is that Israel is a friend and an ally by its nature. While the President was extraordinarily sympathetic to the Palestinian people, particularly to young people who he said are growing up with no hope, he clearly did not accept the three key Palestinian territorial demands. And furthermore, there are some things the PA does that are unacceptable, not only to Israel, but to the United States. Giving up those unacceptable things before the United States will support their desire for an independent state is what some people call preconditions. Yes, precisely. Neutral parties don't do that. Honest brokers do. The PA has to be an acceptable interlocutor, and at the moment it is not. But, said the President, it's never too late. It's time to rise up and meet the challenges of the future. If they do it, it will work. You know the movie, if you build it, they will come. The President said, if they do it, it will work. Max Boot, the columnist in the Washington Post, excoriated the president for making demands of the Palestinians he knows the Palestinians can't meet. So what are those demands exactly? What did the president require of the Palestinians? He asked them to meet what he called the challenges of peaceful coexistence. Four of them: adopt laws ensuring basic human rights and protecting against financial and political corruption, stop the malign activities of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, end incitement against Israel, and permanently halt financial compensation to terrorists. Let's face it, those constitute a very low bar for civilized behavior. If the Palestinians can't or won't do those things, how much peace will any process provide? One Twitter wag asked, anyone think the Kurds would reject a deal that gave them a path to a state and $50 billion if they behaved like human beings? Now, here I have to say, there is an odd assumption in here. When the president said the two-state solution, and Bibi did the same, the assumption is that there are two states between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, and we're just trying to figure out where to put the border between them. That is not true. In fact, there are three. There is Israel, there's the Palestinian Authority with a security force on the West Bank, and there is Hamas with an army in Gaza. The two Palestinian governing authorities are presumed to be able to merge into one, and that the PA will control that. It's a problem. They are at war with each other, and it's unlikely that there will be a merger. And if they fight each other in a war, it is not clear to me that the PA would win. So even if the Palestinian Authority decides to go forward with the vision, that's something to keep in mind. But that's the American position, that that has to happen. And I assume the United States plans to help make it happen should the Palestinians accept the invitation. So aside from asserting the American position that we will not stage manage the process for the Palestinians unless they make internal and external changes, the president also changed the timeline for the conversation. Life and the conflict for Palestinians and Israelis, of course, did not start with Israel's acquisition of the West Bank in 67. The president acknowledged that. He said, it's time for the Muslim world to fix the mistake it made in 1948 when it chose to attack instead of to recognize the new state of Israel. The Palestinians are the primary pawn in this adventurism, and it's time for this sad chapter in history to end. Close quote. By recognizing that the Palestinians were left hanging by their Arab brothers between 1948 and 67, he made the solution to the Palestinian plight partly their responsibility as well. And he did say the solution to the refugee problem would not be in Israel. There were three Arab ambassadors in the room, Bahrain, the UAE, and Oman. None of the three are likely to take very many Palestinian refugees for resettlement. All three, however, are important if you're talking about financing a change in refugee status. The president also changed the timeline by allowing Israel to apply sovereignty over the areas that were always understood for to be Israel in the future, but Israel was told it couldn't annex until the deal was done. The change here is that the U.S. agrees that if Israel is going to get those areas as sovereign territory at some point, and every peace process has agreed to that, it might as well get them now. So instead of having to wait through the Palestinian thought process and behavior process, if we know they're going to end up as Israel, let them be Israel now. On the other hand, areas that are presumed to be for the Palestinian state, the president said, should remain open and undeveloped. He's not cutting them out altogether. Almost as an aside, Mr. Trump noted that Qasem Soleimani's organization, the Quds Force, is in English, the Jerusalem Liberation Organization. He said, to have Jerusalem be free, Soleimani said, we have to be at war with Israel. But in truth, Jerusalem is liberated. Jerusalem is a safe, open, and democratic city. And he plans to keep it that way. That wasn't the only praise Israel got. The president was very pleased that Israel agreed for the first time to produce a map of what two states would look like. You can see the map in the plan. As I said, it's on the internet. It is a very optimistic map from the Israeli point of view, in part because it assumes free passage by the Palestinians from the West Bank to Gaza, And it assumes that you could do that without raising security issues for Israel. I think there's more work to be done on that. But even though I have some trouble with some aspects of the map, it's there. The United States has produced it. Israel has agreed to it in principle. Now it would be useful to ask the Palestinians to produce a map with their proposed settlement and where they think Israel would be when the deal is done. Not, however, until they come to the table as an acceptable partner. Finally, and this is sort of the last thing I'm going to say, I just, there are some questions out there. I know there are. The president was clear in his determination that Israel have security. He said, there will be no incremental risks to the state of Israel. Peace requires compromise, but we will never ask Israel to compromise its security. This is a far cry from prior administrations. President Clinton, President Bush 43, and President Obama all demanded that Israel take, in quotes, risks for peace. And there are many Israelis who agreed with that, who say, we'll take a risk, they'll come forward, we'll have peace. Those risks resulted in the Intifada after Israel signed the Oslo Accords in 1993 and allowed the PA to have an armed security force. It resulted in the entrenchment of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon after Israel left there in 2000, and the rise of Hamas after Israel departed the Gaza Strip in 2005. Mr. Trump is on solid ground here, not only with Israel's leadership, but with the people of Israel. When he says Israel will not have to take any more of those risks, it is time, in this view, that the Palestinians come forward and they take a risk at a political level. The Israelis know how rare it is to have an American president who sees the world the way they do. The Palestinians, too, can take advantage of a president who wants to improve their future. The Palestinians were once offered 97% of the West Bank, and they refused. They are now being offered less. There are people who think it's not fair, but it stands to reason. America, said the president, cannot care more about peace than the stakeholders. He also said this part of the world, meaning the Middle East, meaning the Holy Land, which he referred to often as the Holy Land and referenced the Bible, this part of the world is forever connected to the human soul and the human spirit. Close quote. And I would add, it is connected also to the American spirit. And I'm going to stop there and take questions. I'll read the questions that have come in while we've been talking. The first is, you can send your questions if you have new questions or I've made you think of a question you wanted to ask, you can send your questions to info@jewishpolicycenter.org. So the first question is, in one sentence, President Trump said, quote, Jerusalem is the undivided capital of Israel, close quote, and he reaped a thunderous ovation for that. In the next sentence, he said, quote, Palestinian state with its capital in East Jerusalem. How do we reconcile this? It's a great question. The president also said that he would put a U.S. embassy for the Palestinians in Jerusalem. So I didn't get it when he said it either. So I went to the plan. And this is what it said about the political status of Jerusalem. While a physical division of the city must be avoided, a security barrier currently exists that does not follow the municipal boundary and that already separates Arab neighborhoods, including Kafr Aqab and the eastern part of Shuafat in Jerusalem, from the rest of the neighborhoods in the city. This barrier should remain in place and should serve as a border between the capitals of the two parties. If you remember why that barrier was put in, it's because Palestinians in that part of the city were shooting at roads and shooting at Israeli cars that went between a Jewish area of the city and an Arab area of the city. So the Israeli municipality built this barrier to prevent sniper fire. It is not a physical division of Jerusalem in the sense that it creates two cities. It separates a neighborhood from the rest of the city. Palestinian governmental buildings and a Palestinian parliament and an American embassy could be within the municipal boundaries of Jerusalem, but not dividing the city again. I think that is what the president intended. The next question is, where do you see the conflict in 5 years? Is the post-Abbas Palestinian Authority a stable governing force? The present Abbas Palestinian Authority is not a stable governing force. Abbas, like many of the rulers in the Middle East, has faced a variety of unhappy citizens, people who want better services, better opportunities, better education, a government that doesn't steal from them, and a government that doesn't want them to go out and kill people. So the current Abbas government is problematic. We wrote it off, I think some people wrote it off as much as 10 years ago, yet here it still is. I think in 5 years we will be post-Abbas. I don't think anyone can predict if Lebanon or if Iran or if Iraq or if Tunisia, all places where young Arab people and young Persian people are demanding more from their governments, if this happens on the West Bank, all bets are off. We could end up with a terrific government of younger people who have economic and political desires that are not the same as their predecessors. Or we could have chaos on Israel's border. I'm not sure where we're going. Third question, do Palestinian elections matter? Should Israel be concerned about the lack of democratic legitimacy of the PA leadership with regards to the peace process? Palestinian elections would matter if they had elections. They have not had elections for 14 years. Yes, they matter. The nature of your neighbors matters. Yes, Israel should be concerned about the lack of democratic legitimacy, particularly in light of the previous question that says, what are we going to get post Abbas? The worst thing is chaos. The worst thing is always chaos. So you need a stable government. You need for people to feel that they have a stake in the future. So yeah, it matters, but nobody can make them have elections. Nobody can demand of them anything political. They have to decide it themselves. We have to wait. Here's a question. There's a rumor on JPost that the sovereignty of the so-called Arab Triangle, which is an area in Israel, inside of pre-67 Israel, that is largely inhabited by Arab citizens of Israel, will be transferred to the Palestinians. However, says the question, I don't see that in the plan. Is there any mention of the Arab Triangle in the plan? I have not seen one. The Arab Triangle is something that Israel, they don't really talk about it as not part of Israel. It's just a part of Israel where a lot of Arabs live. They are Arab citizens of Israel. It includes Muslim Arabs. It includes Christian Arabs. I think the notion of swapping out a piece of the Galilee for something else is not in anybody's mind. No, I don't think so. But I do think that the rumor came from something that the president said. He said that nobody on the West Bank would be required to move, not Israelis and not Palestinians, which means that you could have Israeli citizens living as residents in the Palestinian state in the future, which, by the way, is normal. The concept that the Jews can't live in the proposed state of Palestine is racist beyond measure. It's a Nazi thing. So the president says, okay, if you don't move and you end up living in area that is sovereign Palestine, you can be a resident of that place called Palestine. Likewise, Palestinian Arabs who end up on the Israeli side of a secure and recognized boundary may be permanent residents, but they may not wish to be citizens of Israel. All of that is workable. I suspect that somebody thought maybe those Galilee Triangle Arabs would prefer to call themselves citizens of Palestine. I don't think that's true, but I think that's where a rumor like that would come from. Question, if the PA does not accept any of the plan, how free is Israel to act unilaterally? And how will the U.S. back Israel in this case? Good question. If Israel doesn't accept any of the plan, remember that Israel has accepted the parameters of the plan. And one of the things that the plan does is call for a four-year period in which hopefully people on both sides will be moving toward this negotiation and maybe enter it before 4 years. But when the president talked about leaving areas that are presumed to be for the independent Palestinian state, open and undeveloped. I think he was talking about not having Israel plan to build in those areas, not having Israel plan to annex those areas that are meant for a Palestinian state. So the Palestinians have a window within which to work. They're not expected to be ready to take on all of this right away and do it all right away. So it's not clear to me what the questioner is asking. Israel has agreed that for 4 years at least, they will work this problem. Israel always acts unilaterally. As regards its security, I think it will continue to do that. I think the U.S. backs Israel in taking unilateral action on its security. But beyond that, I don't see where Israel will choose to do any other things except annex those areas of major settlement activity, which the United States has now said Israel can do. What is the proposal? Here's the next question. What is the proposal for economic development in the Palestinian areas? Who will be responsible for financing and who are our partners? If you recall, the president had a meeting not too long ago with a number of Gulf Arab countries and others. And one of the things they talked about was how to bring economic security to the Palestinians, how to bring economic progress to the Palestinians. The president did refer to Arab state partners as potential investors in West Bank territory, in jobs, in whatever. He said that he looks to Saudi Arabia, he looks to some of those other countries. Those are our partners. The ambassadors of Oman, Bahrain, and the UAE were in the room yesterday, clearly partners. Jordan is a partner. The problem with all of this is economic investment, as opposed to charity money. Economic investment only goes to places that are prepared to receive it, where the investor feels that he will get a fair return on his investment. He's not going to pay bribes. He's not going to lose the investment to government confiscation or any of those things. So it's important for the Palestinian Authority to be ready to do business in a legitimate and capitalist way. That's what the president asked for. If they do it, there will be investment. Palestinians are a well-educated workforce. They need the jobs. There's no reason, if the laws are changed, if the rules are enforced, that economic investment in the West Bank couldn't be profitable. The last question was, please discuss the letter sent by 12 Democratic senators criticizing the vision. I haven't seen the letter. I'm not prepared to criticize it. It seems to me that if the Israelis are happy and the president is happy and they want to consider themselves pro-Israel, that leads them in one direction. The Palestinians are invited in. That leads them in one direction. I think people should look at this and say, here's an idea. Let's see if we can make it work. On which note, which is a positive note, and I always like to end on a positive note, this call is drawing to a close. I want to thank everyone for being on it, particularly the people who sent in questions. Thank you. They were very good questions. And say to you that we will be back. The Jewish Policy Center is planning a conference call in February with the Honorable Doug Feith. People who have read Doug's work and who know Doug know that that one, although we haven't chosen a subject yet, that one will be an outstanding call. I want to thank you for your attention. Thank you for joining the JPC.